right? Like, Vayigash has Yosef reuniting with his brothers, confessing, there's crying, there's very emotionally charged, right? That's after Yehuda's long plea to Yosef, and then, you know, they sort of reconcile, the brothers come to Egypt, Yaakov is told about Yosef, he, like, faints, and that's really interesting. Then he goes to Egypt, there's a vision in the middle of the night, God says, I'm going to bring you out, like, that's really interesting. You know, and that's all very exciting. And then there's a story at the end of the Parsha. And the issue is, like, the first question is, like, what in the world is it even doing here at all? Right? We have this description of Yosef and his interaction with the Egyptian people as the famine ensues. And it talks about how they run out of money. And then Yosef, you know, gets all their money, and then he takes their cattle, and then he takes their houses, and he's giving them food. And the question is, like, okay, it's all really nice, but, like, it's not even focused on the Jewish people, right? The Torah is the book of the Jews. So why is this chapter from Egyptian history, like, even in the text at all? That's, like, the question. Like, who in the world cares? So that's what I want to focus on, and I actually want to argue that it actually paints Yosef in a complex light. I think how we should look at Yosef's behavior toward the Egyptian people in this time of need is not a simple answer. I think that's part of the story. So let's at least look at first here. I think the first thing to point out is if you compare Yosef's attitude and the way he treats his brothers and then the way he and the rest of his family and the way he then deals with the Egyptian population, it's quite a jarring context, a contrast, right? So if you look here at the beginning of, this is the end of the Parsha, Bereishit Perek Mem Zayin. So it describes how Yosef interacts with Paro in order to help his brothers and his family settle down in Egypt. It says, "Ayava Yosef, Agile Paro." Yosef comes and he tells Paro, "Vayomer, Aviva Chai v'Tanam v'Karam v'Chol Asher Lohem, Bo Meretz Kanam v'Nem Beretz Goshen." My family is here, Paro. This is great, and they've come to Eretz Goshen. And then Mekzei Achav Lakacha Misha Anashim Vayitzgim Paro. He takes some of his brothers, he puts them in front of Paro. Vayomer Paro Lachav Ma Maasechem. Paro says to his brothers, "What do you do? New, like, what do you do for a living?" It's really funny. I had to just say this, that Hirsch has a point on this where he says, you see how horrible the Egyptians are? They don't care about people's essence. They don't care about what's inside or, like, the types of people. All they care about is, like, what they do for a living. That's all they care about. They're just up there. All they care about is the output, the product. And I'm thinking, like, Hirsch, like, this is what people ask when they meet others, right? Like, they say, hey, what do you do? You know? So, like, it's not, like, you know, like, if you're really going to make that criticism, it really is pretty, like, far-reaching. It applies to almost anyone, not just Paro. But that being said, so yes, what do you do? We are shepherds. And they say to Paro, we came to stay in the land. They say, we came to stay in Egypt because there's a very heavy famine. And Canaan, let us stay in Eretz Goshen. And Paro agrees. Basically, Paro gives them this land. He says, let your brother stay there. Egypt is yours. Take the best of the land. If you know that they're very capable, so let them be in charge of my cattle. Right? The truth is, if you back up a few psukim, this was actually rehearsed, right? Yosef had told his brothers to say this exactly. He says, when you're going to go to Paro, he's going to ask you, what do you do? You're going to say, you are Anshei Mekneh, that's what we've done, and you're going to ask for Eretz Goshen, he's going to give it to you. The whole thing's planned out. It seems like it works rather remarkably, right? Paro gives Yosef's family what they want. They get Eretz Goshen, the best of the land. Wonderful. Fine. Then we look at what happens to the rest of Egypt. Okay, so then we have the continuation here. Yosef Yosef David Atachav Vayitin Hamachozav Eretz Mitzrayim Meitav Aretz Eretz Ramses Kasher Tzival Paro. Yosef houses his brothers and his father, and he gives them an achuzah and a possession of the land in Egypt, in the best of the land in Eretz Ramses. A bit of discussion is Ramses in Goshen, near Goshen, not for us for now, as Parah commanded. And Yosef provides for his brothers and his father bread according to their children. And then think about this next pasuk. And there is no bread in all of the land of Egypt. There is no bread, but Yosef's giving bread to his family. Bit of a tough word, but you know, the land of Egypt are worn out because of this famine. Like, they don't have anything. But okay, Yosef at kol ha-kesedim of Eretz Mitzrayim. Yosef gathers all of the money in Eretz Mitzrayim, Eretz Canaan, in the land of Canaan. Ba'ashever ha-shehem chomrim, based on the purchases that these people made. Ba'yave Yosef ve'akesed beitza paro. So Yosef collects all of the money of the population, the populace, and he brings it to Paro's house. All the money, right? And again, think about the contrast. Yosef's family, they're taken care of. They're in Eretz Goshen. They have bread. They have a field. They have their cattle. Everyone else, they lose all. They run out of money. Now, just worth noting, if you look in Source 3, the Shaddal has a bit of a discussion here, where it's not 100% clear what the chronology is. If you remember, Yosef tells Paro there are going to be 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. And then you throw that in with the fact that the Chazal have a Midrash that when Yaakov comes to Egypt, the famine stops. So the question is, when exactly is this? So Rashi says that what happened was this is actually going back in time before the brothers even get there, this next pasuk, which isn't the simple explanation. But what he's saying is this is when they, during the beginning of the years of famine, the first 2 years, we're going back in time, this is what had happened between Yosef and the population. However, Ramban, he points out, others say, no, this is actually what happened during the 7 years of plenty. This is what had happened when there was food, even further back. This is not during the famine. Otherwise, the question is, if the famine indeed stopped, then why are they begging for food? Fine. Anyways, so the point is, they're going to Yosef, they ran out of food. Okay. So now what do they do? So they offer whatever they have, right? But Yitoma Kesem Eretz Yisrael, Ve'avo Kol Pemaitzrayim Yosef Le'mor Havel Anu Lechem Ve'lama Nomba Sadech Hakiyah Fe'es Kaseh. Like, go to Yosef. We have no more money. Why should we die? Because we ran out of money. So Yosef says, So bring your cattle. Pay with your sheep. Pay with your flock. And they do it. They bring their cattle to Yosef. So Yosef gives them bread, and with their horses and with their cattle. Good. That's the first year. That first year, which is again either year 6 or year 1 in the year of famine. In the famine. Fine. Vatitoma shanahi. Ve'avo elaba shanahi shinit. So that year finishes and they come into the second year. Ve'yomru lo nechachim yaduni kim tama kesa mekne'a behem aldani. We're not hiding anything. We lost all our money. We lost all our cattle. All we have left is our bodies and our land. Why should we die in front of your eyes? Both us and our land. Buy us and our property for the bread. We and our lands will be slaves to Paro. Give us some seed. You'll give us seed and we'll live and the land won't be desolate. Because if you don't plant the land, it's going to go bad anyway. So this is quite an offer they're making, right? He's literally taken everything and Yosef says, okay. It sounds like he says, okay. It's actually interesting what comes next. Yosef acquires all the land of Egypt for Paro. So now Paro literally owns the entire land of Egypt. Right? Ki machru Mitzrayim misadeyu, all the men of Egypt had sold their fields. Yichazaka elam rarav ya'aretz laparo. The whole land was Paro's. Ve'etam heviro tolarim. He brought the nation to the cities. Okay, that's, well, we'll see what that exactly means. Mitzeva Mitzrayim v'akatzeir. So he brings them. It sounds like there's some sort of migration happening here. Like everybody's moving. And from one end of Egypt to the other. But however, the priests, which is a very interesting point, when you think about Kohanim, in this context, and our Kohanim, so Paro left the Kohanim their land, because they didn't sell their land. And then now Yosef talks again. Yosef, I have bought you and your land for Paro. This is your seed, and you plant the field. And from the grain, you'll give a fifth to Paro. So we cut the deal with them. You give one-fifth of what you sow for Paro. The rest, four-fifths, goes to you. And you've let us live. You know, let us become slaves of Paro. And he says again, Yosef made this a rule forevermore, right? Until today, says Moshe Rabbeinu, in the land of Egypt, that the land would be everything, Paro gets a fifth, and only the land of the priests doesn't go to Paro. But, and then the contrast. But Yeshev Yisrael bears Maram Eretz Goshen. But Israel lives in Eretz Goshen, by Achazuba, and they take hold of it, by Yifru, by Yirbu Ma'od. And they're very fruitful and they multiply. And that is the end of Parshat Vayigash. So the question is twofold. Number one, again, why is this here? Like, why is this important? Number two, how should we look at Yosef's behavior? Is Yosef acting admirably here? Is he being fair and just? Is he being malicious? Right? So on the one hand, it's complicated, right? It's not so simple. I think on the one hand, there's a clear contrast between Yosef's treatment of his family and Yosef's treatment of the Egyptians. It's like undeniable. On the what happens to the Mitzrim's flock? Everything is Paro's. Yosef's family keep their flock. Yosef's family, I'm not even sure they're paying for their food. He gives them food. The Mitzrim spend everything that they own just to have food. That's one factor. So there's another. It's not so simple, though, because whose choice is this, ultimately? Like, whose decision was for Yosef to take all of the food and the money and everything?
Like,
is that Paro's? Paro's. But it's also, it sounds like it's the Egyptians, right? They say, take our food, take our cattle, take our land, take ourselves. So, as you might have expected, there are different approaches here, and I think you'll take them together. That's what I'm going to argue. So, you have the classical Rishon approach. And I don't think it's dishonest. I just think that, you know, it gives one side of the story, which is that Yosef is actually being the perfect, you know, faithful minister to Paro here. Right? Yosef is doing what his job is to take care of Paro. Right? His job is to run Egypt for Paro. And at the same time, his job also is to take care of his family. He's doing both very admirably, right? So you look at the Ramban here. The Ramban says, so a few points here, actually. So number one, let me go a little further first. Let me show you this Ramban. This is the positive perspective. Look at the Ramban. Doc says, Lo dia amunatol she Yosef, right? This is to tell you how faithful Yosef was. He could have taken all the money to his house. Paro wasn't even monitoring this. He knew Yosef was faithful. But he didn't. He guarded himself from suspicion. Right when he gets the money, brings the Paro's house. He doesn't even give like rise to suspicion. Like he doesn't even take and then take. No, right to Paro's house. Rabban. What does Rabban says? Sibra katava zeva gamar ha'in b'chala parasha. What's the point of this parasha? Lodia ma'alat Yosef b'chachma b'tfinav adat. To tell you how wise Yosef was. Ki haya isha munim. He was faithful. Shevikal kesed be Paro. Brought all the money to Paro's house. He didn't make himself a hidden treasure. He didn't steal. He didn't send it to Eretz Canaan. He got everything for Paro. And the people liked it also. God takes care of those who fear him. Alright, what's the point of this parsha? Yosef is the best. Yosef is faithful. A faithful servant. And that's one perspective. In that light, we have to look sort of here at some of the things Yosef does, right? So one of the things Yosef does is he forces a migration, right? He forces everybody to move. Why did he do that? What was the point of that? So there are two perspectives here, actually. And it's not so simple. Even given what we said. So Radak says, why did he do this? Right? He doesn't want everybody. He sent them all around. He didn't want them to have their land of their heritage. He didn't want the Egyptians, once they sold their land, they shouldn't stay there. So that everybody knows that this is Paro's. Right? And they give him the fifth. He's basically displacing the population so they don't feel any ownership over their land. They sold it, but that's what they shouldn't. Rashi says it a bit differently. He says he wanted Yosef, why did he not want them to think they own the land? So that when his family This is Rashi. Rashi is an interesting way. He didn't want his brothers to feel inadequate. Like, oh, look at the new people. Look at the immigrants. Look at the exilees. They don't have their own land. They're just here. No, no one is in their own land. Everybody is just sort of a stranger. Now, that's sort of interesting, isn't it? Like, is that a fair thing to do? To just make all the Egyptians move so Yosef's brothers feel better? It's not so simple. You didn't have to say it that way. Another way to say it, which is actually what the Gemara says, is that it wasn't as much about making Yosef feel good. It was about letting them get Goshen. Because if they, you know, if not, then the people who were living in Goshen already might have, you know, objected or whatever it was, and he wanted to find somewhere for them to live, so he did this. But it's still sort of manipulating the population. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, okay, so you have the Rav Hirsch or Shmuel of Lutzato, who the way they read the psukim is that while this was certainly quite a administrative decision by Yosef here, the way they learn the psukim, le'arim, means he kept the populations together. Meaning if you lived in a city with your friends and your neighbors, you stayed with them as one group and one unit, but you just moved somewhere else to make it a bit easier. Right? So the point is that you could sort of look at this as like, this is just Yosef being great. And like Rav Hirsch points out, well, look, this was their suggestion. They wanted this. They told Yosef to do this. He makes it easier on them. He gives them four-fifths of the land. He didn't need to do that. They were slaves. It's even a discussion as to whether or not they actually become slaves. So the way the Ramban looks at it is that he refuses to make them slaves. Like, he just takes their land. But the Malbim says, right, I'll read it for here. V'chein amar hin kaniti echem hayom ve'mavachem. Aval amar v'yiken Yosef v'kol amat Mitzrayim leparo. Ki machar Mitzrayim yesterday v'lo amar shigagufam rak adama. Right? He says that ultimately he didn't buy them. He just bought the land. And they're the ones who wanted to be slaves ultimately. That's what he says. This wasn't Yosef's idea. And the Malbim sort of says it a bit differently. Originally, Yosef didn't want to acquire them, and then ultimately he did. Right? So there's a way. There are elements of this which speak to Yosef's benefit. On the other hand, if you take a step back, this does not necessarily bode so well for Yosef, right? Ultimately, in two ways. Number one, it's, you know, whether he might be doing it in administrative capacity, but at the same time, he's clearly taking advantage of the Egyptians here, right? Like, he's buying them out of house of home. That's number one. Number two, politically, is it good for a country when the king owns everything? So, you know, here in the 20th century, 21st century, and even in the 20th century, 19th century, if you look in some of the Farshim, they did not think this was so good, right? Like, no, we don't want the king to own everything. It's bad. It can be very bad when the government owns everything. And it gets complicated in that discussion. Like, was this good what Yosef did, giving all the money to Paro? And then you think about the prejudice. Well, how must have the Egyptians felt with these Jews living in Goshen? Possibly exempt from giving a fifth. They had their cattle. They're getting food, and yet we sold everything. So Yosef Bechor Shor connects all this to what happens in Shemot. Right? Paro needed like a lot of storehouses. Right? Right? Yosef's brothers didn't give the Chomesh. He tired them. The lo mecharu. He didn't sell them. Muvo ba'alila ayisrael more. The Egyptians complain against the Jews. All the Egyptians serve the kings. They work the land, and he gets a fifth. V'chol b'am tamshlo, and he owns all their animals. V'hei megalim otzam. V'nod nechatzi avadzo l'melech. They give all the stuff to the king. V'kulam arisin, and they're all sharecroppers. V'al temin emodim otzam. You don't serve him. You Jews, you don't serve the king at all. L'chein kevin sham mitzvim nod na tuva otam banu et otro. So then you build the storehouses. This is only right. It's only right that you build these pyramids, because you don't do anything. So that Yosef's actions here actually lead to what ends up being the Jewish enslavement in Egypt. It's a very compelling case that can be made for this, right? It's not like the factors do seem like they add up. It's also worth noting that Yosef doesn't have the happiest ending, right? I just brought this here in number 12. The last pasuk in Bereishit is, "Vayam Yosef b'mei v'aser shanim." Yosef dies at 110. They embalm him, and he's put in a coffin in Egypt. Right, Yosef was the Jew's saving grace, but Yosef himself ends up being trapped. He doesn't die where he wants to, and he can't be buried where he wants to. So David Sabato argues that maybe that's part of the point, is that this is actually the lead-up to the next parsha. This is the lead-up to Shemos. And he also points out that the Torah itself has a number of mitzvot which seemingly safeguard against this type of activity. If you look in Parshat Bahar, this is the Parshat of Shemitah and Yovel and all those things. The theme always is, at least for the Jewish people, God, Jewish people are independent. They don't let them become slaves. Don't let them lose their property. Don't let them lose their field of heritage. Buy them out of it. Redeem them, right? The Torah says in Vayikra, if your brother becomes poor and he sells his field that was his field of inheritance, his ancestral land, what do? You buy it back. Buy it back. Don't let people lose their lands. Right? People lose money. You got to help him out. You If your brother becomes poor, then you got to help him out, strengthen him. Don't take interests, right? You know, don't take advantage of him, because I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt. Because you know what it's like to be taken advantage of, right? If your brother becomes poor and he's sold to you, don't treat him like a slave. Treat him like a resident and a worker. He eventually leaves. He's not going to be your slave forever. This exact sort of situation whereby the Mitzrim end up losing their money, losing their land, and losing themselves, the Torah specifically prescribes mitzvot which prevent that from happening. Right? Because we recognize the danger of this sort of thing. And I'll also note, even in terms of the kingship, it does say in the Torah that a king's not supposed to have so much money. Bekesef v'zahav lo yarbe lo ma'od. Right? So you could say, well, look, like, clearly the Torah was not so pleased with what Yosef ended up doing. I'm not saying that this is necessarily a direct response to this. I think that's taking a bit too far, but I think it is a response to this sort of situation which this kind of thing could lead to, right? We want people to maintain that independence. We don't want them to be encumbered by others, to lose their land, to lose their money, and to lose themselves. That's not something that we want. I think the proper perspective is that both these combine. And I think you have to think about Yosef for a second here, right? So what Yosef, I think, essentially does here is two things. He's working for Paro, he's taking care of his family. And you could look at that, oh, he's a politician. Oh, like, you know, he has his job, and he looks out for the best, his family's best, and, you know, he's taking, you know, special interest in them. It's not Yashar. But I don't think Yosef saw it that way. Because Yosef is a man who has a certain prophetic approach toward life. Yosef is a dreamer. Yosef is someone who's always trying to think why God put him in this situation. And Yosef tells us why he thinks God put him in this situation. Number one, in terms of his dream, all the way back in Parshat Vayeshev, when he's ma'amim, he sees the brothers gathering bundles in the field, they bow down to his bundle, Cheskuni says, that is a vision of this, of Yosef rising to prominence and being in charge of divvying out grain and produce to Egypt and to his brothers. This is his job, God-given job. And he says this to the brothers, right? After the brothers, you know, he tells them, I'm Yosef, and they're all kind of scared because this is the brother they sold, and he's actually a dictator in a very powerful land, and he can do whatever he wants to them, as he's just showed them. He says, no, don't worry. He says, don't be sad. Don't be angry. Right? Because God sent me here to keep you alive. Because there's going to be a famine and then another 7 years. Right? There's already been 2 years of famine. There's another 5 years. God sent me in front of you to enable you to have a remnant in the land. And to let you live. Right? God sent me here. I am sort of in charge of Paro. I'm in charge of everything. That's why I'm here. So Yosef sees this as his divine mission. He sees this as what God wants him to do. I think here's the irony, and it really is a very compelling Ashkafic philosophical question. And the question is, was Yosef right in this estimation? And I don't know the answer to that, but what ultimately happens is very ironic, because it seems inevitable. Even if you, like, taking aside the jealousy, Yosef clearly does lead to the Jews settling in Egypt and taking roots there, and they ultimately become slaves. Which is God's ultimate plan. And sort of it really makes you think about whether Yosef, how, you know, the role that Yosef had. And on the one hand, Yosef is someone who is very actively tries to influence what happens to him and his family and take an active role in God's divine providence. Right? Like, I think this is what Hashem wants. This is why I'm here. Let's make it happen. And it doesn't always go the way we plan when these things happen. I think that's part of the point here. And it raises questions of, well, what role should we have in bringing God's plan to fruition? And is that really our place or is it not? And I don't think it's a simple answer. And I think you sort of have to weigh, like, you know, we listen to God's explicit commands and we try to figure out what he wants from us. But maybe we have to have a bit of humility in terms of, like, what we think we can really do in bringing God's plan to fruition. And also there's a room in our lives for taking a step back and saying, look, I know what I'm supposed to do, what I think is right, and the rest of Hashem has to take care of. And I think that is sort of the question to ask about Yosef, which is, look, say what you want about Yosef, but ultimately what he tries to do ends up happening in a way that's almost opposite of his goal. And ultimately, he causes the Jews to become slaves. And so it's quite actually tragic the way his life ends. Ultimately, it's for the good. Ultimately, we arise from slavery, but it's not the way Yosef would have wanted it, certainly. He didn't want to be buried in Egypt. He didn't want his family to become slaves. He didn't want them to have this sort of hatred. He did it all, I would say, l'shem shamayim. At least he says he did. I don't think he did anything like purposefully wrong. But when we try to sort of, we do too much, more than necessary, to bring about a prophetic vision, it doesn't always work out the way we want to. And I think that's where the humility you have to have. And so I feel like something to think about with this parsha is, you know, this question of, like, you know, our role in God's divine plan and what role we should play. And we can't be too passive, but we can't be too active either, to have a certain humility. And always, like, asking the question of, like, is this really the best thing to do? And what might happen in the future based on the decisions I'm making now? So, it's actually a very thought. Ultimately, I think there is a lot to say about the story. It's not just Egyptian history. It has a lot to do with the Jewish story as well. So, absolutely. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Easy, meaningful, fast.